This is Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and welcome to my 6th anniversary show. I want to start out this show by featuring several lesbian and gay acts from a number of years ago who are no longer on the music scene, but should definitely not be forgotten. And I'm going to finish up with a special interview with a fairly new artist named Levi Kreis, who I think we're going to hear a lot more from. The opening song was called We Won't Be Silent and is the title track from the debut album by a group called Your Girlfriend. They were a lesbian band from Kentucky, and I love the story of how the group was able to release its first album. They had been playing locally in Louisville for a couple years and had attracted quite a following. So in the summer of 1989, they took an approach that is so true to the spirit of the women's music movement. They staged their own music festival as a benefit to raise money to record their album. As I said, that album was called We Won't Be Silent, and it really set the tone for all three of their albums, and that spirit is one of the reasons I like the group so much. It was important to them to sing songs that reflected both the personal and the political aspects of being out as lesbians. You'll see the variety of their music, and also how political their music can get in this medley I put together of some of their songs.
Hey, Kevin, are you going to hell? They used to let you teach in Sunday school and fix their stained glass windows. Yeah, they thought you were cool. You made the right music for so many years, and you played a wrong note and set off their fears. Well, so long now, buddy, you said you were queer. Hey, Kevin, are you going to heaven? Were they gonna let you go yesterday before you said you were?
Step.
Special Your Girlfriend medley featured 8 songs from all 3 of their albums. From We Won't Be Silent from 1989 was The Ballad of Kevin and She's Not Somebody's Wife. In 1992, they released L Words Spoken Here, and from it you heard Take Another Step, Dyke Time, and L Word. The very catchy Les B Bop can only be found on a various artist compilation from 1993. That CD featured a who's who of women's music artists, and was produced by Jamie Anderson. It was called A Family of Friends. And in 1995 came the 3rd and last album by the group, called Not Afraid to Love. And from that one I brought you The Extra Bedroom Blues and Fairness. The principal singers and writers for the group were Carol Kramer and Laura Shine. And Laura can still be heard on the airwaves, but in a different fashion, as she's one of the main voices on Louisville radio station WFPK, where among the several shows she hosts is one called Women Waves. Again, I was very pleased to tell you about the group Your Girlfriend. Next up is an artist from the Southwest. Bill Folk wrote this song for the first lesbian and gay rights march that was held in Phoenix, Arizona in 1981. It's called We Are Here.
We are here, and we're not going away. Growing stronger day by day. Out of the struggle, the sorrow and pain, out of the darkness, out of the shame, into the open, in plain sight.
Choose in coming out, and we
Admittedly, the song We Are Here sounds very dated by now, but remember that in 1981, the idea of a gay anthem was very new. That song was released on a 7-inch, 45 RPM record. Remember those? Its flip side was called Woman to Woman, Man to Man. Bill Fulk was very active politically in the Phoenix gay community until he moved to San Francisco in 1983. There he became the first executive director of the Stop AIDS Project. In 1991, he released a full-length album, and while he may not have been the greatest singer, I really like the album. It is consistently upbeat and very lyrically out all the way through. Here are my two favorites from Bill Fulk's CD, starting with one called Man Lovin', Lovin' Man, followed by the title track, Looking for Mr. Right.
I'm a man lovin', lovin' man. Give and get my lovin' when and where I can. I'm a lovin' lover, yes I am. I'm a man lovin', lovin' man.
There are times when I would be out every night, going to the bars looking for Mr. Right. But ever since I met you, everything's so fine. Now we got each other's loving all the time. You put your arms around me and it feels so good. Feels just like the way I always knew it would. Being held so closely with your tender touch makes me realize just why I love you so much. I'm a man, loving, loving man. Give and get my loving when and where I can. I'm a loving lover, yes I am. I'm a man, loving, loving man.
Thinking of the times when I was so alone, being with you shows me just how much I've grown. Learning to be honest in the things I say, saying that I love you makes my night and day. You're the kind of guy that I can love the best. You're the one who's different, not like all the rest. I see you smiling, I know it was meant to be. So why let you be you when you let me be me?
I'm a man, loving, loving man. Give and get my love and when and where I can. I'm a loving lover, yes I am. I'm a man, loving, loving.
Doesn't last until in death we part. Still I can't help think we got a real good start. Through life's ups and downs we both survive somehow. So let's enjoy our loving in the here and now. Cause there are times in
life when things can get real tough. All the love we have, this may not be enough. The feelings, whether good or bad, we can't discard. But we can still make love whenever things get hard. I'm a man, loving, loving man. Giving, getting my love and when and where I can. I'm a loving lover. I'm a loving lover, yes I am. I'm a man, loving, loving man. 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 Man, loving, loving man.
Walking down the street, hoping you'll meet someone to fulfill your dreams. Someone who will care, someone to be there. An endless task, or so it seems. People pass you by, you keep on asking why. It's plain your dream is out of sight. You're looking, 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 looking for Mr. Right. You're looking, 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 looking for Mr. Right. Everywhere you go, someone wants to know what you're doing out all alone. They don't want to hear the blues, they just want to hear the news. You've got someone you can call your own. You have no regrets, you're not taking bets, 'cause your dreams may all come true tonight. You're looking, 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 looking for Mr. Right. You're looking, 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 looking for Mr. Right. Looking for Mr. Right. You're looking, 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 looking for Mr. Right. Some days it's hard to smile, you can do it for a while. It fades just like the setting sun. It's at night times you dread, when you're home alone in bed. You'd rather be with someone having fun. The days they come and go, the nights move oh so slow, and you're eager for the morning light. Looking, 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 looking for Mr. Right. You're looking, 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 you're looking, looking, you keep on looking.
Again, those two songs were from Bill Folk's 1991 album, Looking for Mr. Right. Sadly, his 45 in the album are all we have to remember him by musically, as he died in 1999. In 1974, a musical opened off-Broadway and ran for a year and a half, attracting a lot of attention. Writer-composer Earl Wilson set his goal to write the most liberated, most sexually free show he could, and he did. He called it Let My People Come. The show included simulated sexual acts of all persuasions and many songs that then and now are definitely not ready for radio. One of the cast members was cabaret singer Larry Paulette, and his solo song from the musical was called Take Me Home With You.
I come here every night and I squeeze into the crowd. Stand man beneath the only light. And I whisper this out loud. See, it's getting kind of late. Last call already is overdue. Tommy wants to close the bar. Won't you take me home with you? I've been standing here all night. Guess I've had quite a few. Wish I had some place to go. Won't you take me home with you? Might make quite a pair. Don't you think it might be nice to know that someone else is there? The night's impossible for one. And tomorrow I'll be gone. So won't you take me home with you?
In 1977, 3 years after Let My People Come, Larry Paulette released his solo album called What Makes a Man a Man. It was released on the mainstream label Vanguard. And while it was not the first openly gay album released by a major label, it was obvious that even they considered it a bold act. In the press kit for the album, it states, "At Vanguard, we have always been willing, if not indeed eager, to take risks. Wherever we found talent, we found the means to share that talent with others. We released the now legendary The Weavers at Carnegie Hall, while those performers were blacklisted, because we believed in them. We believe in Larry Paulette, too. Paulette is one of a precious few performers to deal openly with homosexuality, but what he is really dealing openly with is love." The title track from the album, What Makes a Man, was written and made famous by French singer Charles Aznavour. It gives a gripping, melancholy look at the social alienation of the world of a drag artist.
My mom and I, we live alone. A grand apartment is our home in New York City. I have to keep me company, two cats, a dog, a parakeet. They're very pretty. I help my mother with the chores. I wash, she dries, I do the floors. We work together. I shop and cook and sew a bit. Though mom does too, I must admit, I do it better. At night I work in a strange bar, impersonating every star. I'm quite deceived. The customers come in with doubt and wonder what I am all about. But leaving, I do a very special show where I am nude from head to toe after strip-teasing. Each night the men look so surprised, I change my sex before their eyes. Tell me if you can, what makes a man a man? Round 3 o'clock or so, I meet with friends to have a bite to eat and conversation. We talk and empty out our hearts on every subject from the arts to liberation. We love to pull apart someone and spread some gossip just for fun, or start a rumor. We let our hair down, so to speak, and mock ourselves with tongue-in-cheek and inside humor. So many times we have to pay for having fun and being gay. It's not amusing. There's always those to spoil our games by finding fault and calling names. Always accusing. They draw attention to themselves at the expense of someone else. It's so confusing. Yet they make fun of how I walk and imitate the way I talk. Tell me if you can, what makes a man? Oh. My masquerade comes to an end when I go home to bed again. Alone and friends, I close my eyes and think of him and fantasize what might have been. My dreams are endless. We love each other, but it seems the love lives only in my dreams. It's so one-sided. Yet in this life I must confess, the search for love and happiness is unrequited. To be the judge of what is right for me. Tell me, if you can, what makes a man a man? Cast two silhouettes on the shade. Oh, what a lovely couple they made. He put his arms around your waist, held you tight, kisses I could almost taste in the night. Wondered why I'm not the guy whose silhouette's on the shade. I couldn't hide the tears in my eyes. My shop. Say, Mary, you're on the wrong block. This isn't Third Avenue, this is Lexington. I'm sorry. I rushed down to your house with wings on my feet. Loved you like I've ever loved you, my sweet. Vowed that you and I would stay. Two silhouettes on the shades all of our days. Two silhouettes on the
was Larry Paulette. Following What Makes a Man a Man was a very light-hearted version of the oldie Silhouettes. Unfortunately, I have no idea what became of Larry Paulette after the 70s. One of the sad things about our musical heritage is that so much of it is just lost, and that even applies to searching for information on the Internet. If you would do searches for any of the acts you've heard so far, Your Girlfriend, Bill Folk, or Larry Paulette, you'd find next to nothing. Perhaps a few mentions on an old archive playlist or on a record catalog, but no meaningful information. I wish that were not the case, but that's one of the reasons you'll hear artists like that on my shows.
Hey, this is Levi Kreitz, and you're listening to Queer Music Heritage on KPFT in Houston.
And this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Friday night, Saturday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. Now, the rest of tonight's show will be devoted to a very fun interview with rising artist Levi Kreitz. I first became aware of him in 2002 when I was in Los Angeles visiting my audiophile co-producers Chris Wilson and Christopher David Trentum. We went to a wonderful play called Southern Baptist Sissies, and Levi performed the play's theme song at the end. We spoke to him briefly after the show, and I picked up his debut album, but I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Levi Kreitz is a Tennessee boy who's been through a lot. Raised Southern Baptist, he was on his way to become a Christian artist, but that nasty old homosexuality got in the way. He spent 6 years in an ex-gay program before finally getting out and coming out into his own. Moving to L.A., he almost immediately found acting work in a touring company of Rent and has had nice roles in a couple of movies. And he got involved in the hit play Southern Baptist Sissies, written by Del Shores, who gave us the movie Sordid Lives. Levi issued a self-released album around that time called Rough Around the Edges. Focusing more on music, he was signed with Atlantic Records and spent a year, as they say, in development, almost finishing an album. He was frankly relieved when the sub-label he was on, Elektra, folded and he and many others were let go. He would have had to stay deep in the closet on that label. That pretty much brings us up to late last fall, when he released a new album and landed a Plum TV appearance, which he'll tell us about. But that's enough intro. Let's get to the music. His new album is called One of the Ones, and the song we've been listening to in the background is called With You. Tell me about your new CD.
It's a collection of songs about relationships that I've been in with various guys that I've crushed on or dated or loved with all my heart. And I chose to keep it very intimate, just the piano and the vocals, and hoping that the experiences can are relatable to the listener in a very intimate way.
How would you describe your musical style to someone who hasn't heard it?
I would describe my musical style as definitely influenced by the church. Growing up with gospel music, I think you learn initially that music is expressed from a place of deep commitment and passion, being that it is expressed from your beliefs. And not that, being not in the church now, I find that even still, the things that I write and the way that I perform is so very much a product of the church. I always want to try to put something positive in there, but I also want to be very honest and universal, you know, and try to craft lyrics that are relatable to anyone who's listening. Overall, I just want it to be something that people say, this is raw, this is honest, and this is vulnerable, and I can totally relate.
I like that you didn't have background singers and whatnot, because that would have changed the whole tone.
Absolutely. I imagined in creating the CD that it was me in your living room, basically, to be able to have kind of a one-on-one with the listener, in a way. I think the subject matter is so personal that it almost lends itself quite well to that approach.
In November, Levi was on an episode of Donald Trump's show, The Apprentice, so of course I had to ask him about that.
I was in New York City working with a couple producers that were shopping me the labels, and there's a lot of label interest and whatnot, and one of the producers was called by Mark Burnett Productions, as the two teams were each given a producer and a songwriter for their own resources during the challenge, and he submitted me to the production team, and it was probably over 1,000 submissions. I didn't expect to hear anything, but it was a nice surprise to get that phone call. And as soon as the phone call was received, I mean, I was kind of whisked away into what became a 36-hour whirlwind.
Did you feel manufactured during that process?
You know, I was afraid of that, but it turned out, no, I didn't at all. The team that had the challenge of writing and recording and producing and packaging a song of mine and presenting it to XM Radio, they took great lengths to get to know who I was. They sat me down for 2 hours, and they just really tried to understand why I write the way that I write, what my musical influences were, and the spirit behind which I create, and styles that have influenced me. And I think they nailed it. And they ended up with a song that I could easily hear in my own repertoire.
Is it on the CD?
Unfortunately, no, because the Donald owns it. So I have had, JD, so many requests via emails, probably over 600-700 for that song. And luckily, these people are also buying my CD. But it's just been unavailable, and I don't know if they have plans to release it or put it on iTunes. I think it's so silly that they didn't, because they could have been making some decent money from it.
Well, though it's not released, Levi was kind enough to send me the song so I could share part of it with you. Here's a little bit of the song produced on that episode of The Apprentice. It's called Nothing Can Be Everything.
It's just the way it goes, I tell you. Nothing can be everything. From the outside looking in, don't you live and fade away, yeah. Nothing can be everything. From the inside you begin. Scream a little loud, jump a little high. Dig a little deep, light a bigger fire. Cause you'll never know, even never try. Cause you gotta live before you.
When did that episode of The Apprentice air?
That was November 17th, and I had tried to plan my own CD release the same night. So the challenge for me was trying to coordinate everything that I had planned for my own release. You know, I obviously wasn't allowed to promote my own thing, but just hoping that people would actually see what was going on there and you know, go to Google and Google me and come to my website and actually begin to purchase. And luckily, it just kind of like worked really smoothly.
So it's only been a month. What do you think the impact has been being on that show?
It's been fascinating to see the responses. You know, I think so much of it is perception, too. I mean, being associated with something like that, a product like that, it just helped out so much. You know, you got a show where you're like literally maybe there's 7-10 minutes. You don't even see the full gamut of what you can do, but just the association of it, just little 7-10 minute infomercial was all that I needed to get people's interest. I've had so many emails of people that were just kind of had the TV on in the background doing their own thing and heard the voice, immediately responded, went and found me, and made the purchase and have, you know, written me back saying, you know, I really relate to this CD. I love it.
If any of you have seen the wonderful movie Sordid Lives, well, the writer and director of that movie was Del Shores, and he's also written a hit play that's had several runs in L.A. called Southern Baptist Sissies. It was at one of those performances a few years ago that I first saw Levi Kreis, and in the background is his song Stained Glass Window that we're listening to from the play.
Oh, consider this for a moment or two. You are ocean blue. We're just two of many colors in a stained glass window. And love is the light that's shining through.
Tell me about your involvement with the play Southern Baptist Sissies.
Oh, my involvement with Southern Baptist Sissies. I had just moved here to Los Angeles, and I was had no knowledge of the play at all. I was walking past the theater, a couple friends of mine grabbed me and pulled me into the theater, and saw this huge poster in front of me, this, you know, guy on a cross completely naked, you know, in one of these little bikini briefs. And, you know, my old fundamental Baptist self was disturbed by that at the time. And I'm like, guys, I don't know exactly what this play is going to be about. But then I went in and I began to watch the unfolding of these four guys who have lived their life in the church and dealing with, you know, having a passion for God, but at the same time feeling like they were an abomination to God at the same time. And by the end of the first act, I was in a fetal position, just crying my eyes out. And Del Shores, the writer and director, was behind me, watching me break down. You know, I'd never realized that there was anyone else out there that had gone through that experience, you know. So Del approached me after the first act, and it was so funny. And here I am, a mess, bawling my eyes out, and he comes up to me and says, "Hun, you need a Kleenex." And we laughed about it, and afterwards he came to me and he was like, "You know what, you can see this play as many times as you want, for free, whatever it takes for you to be able to get past the pain, the past." And he just welcomed me with open arms into the family. I ended up writing a song based on the play, and it's become the theme song for the play. And that song kind of was a period on the end of that experience for me.
Were you out of the closet at the time?
No, not with career, I wasn't. I think at the time I was involved with some sort of demo deal with A&M Records at the time, and I was still very involved with all the major labels kind of hyping over what I was doing, and had not yet come to the point where I was kind of owning who I was.
How many years has that play been performed?
It's had two runs. It's starting on its third run, and it opens mid-January. Probably 2001, I think, is when it started.
And when did you start singing after it?
For the second run in 2000, I'm not sure on these dates, 2002 perhaps.
That's when I saw you, if that was the year. It was about 3 years ago.
Oh, okay. Because I was singing regularly after that then, at that point, right?
Yeah, and you were doing the meet and greet afterwards.
Yeah. And that's when I had the little Live City. And the funny thing about it was, even with everything that was going on with major labels, at the time of me singing after that play and my association with the play, it's almost like I knew, just from allowing myself to be associated with the play and express what that play had done for me, was kind of like myself telling myself, without me realizing it, that being an openly gay artist was the path that I was being called to, you know, to be that free with my life experiences. And another thing, I realized that at the time, I was just being in the moment, and thank God I was true to expressing what that play had done for me by not being afraid to associate with it and not being afraid to write that song and share it with the conviction that it came to me, you know.
And the song you're talking about is Stained Glass Window.
Yes, Stained Glass Window.
Would you talk about that song?
Yes. I drew a lot of the words actually from Del's monologues, specifically when the characters begin to realize that the essence of God is love. And I wanted to convey that in a way that would dispel or challenge perhaps the ideas that we as young fundamental Baptist boys growing up had, this idea that God's acceptance is conditional, and that we must be a certain thing in order to experience that love of God. And I wanted to kind of hopefully embody that in the lyric.
And you released an album around that time?
Yes. It was a live album called Rough Around the Edges. And Stained Glass Window was the last track on there.
How would you compare this album to your first one?
This one was a lot harder for me to write because I made a concerted effort to be really vulnerable in writing about relationships that weren't very comfortable for me to write about, because there's been a lot of heartache here and there in the last 3 years. And the songs on Rough Around the Edges were, you know, some of them were a lot more fun. It didn't really force me to delve into a private place.
Yeah, they're not as personal.
No, they're not as personal, and they're certainly not as revealing. That was the biggest difference from that album to this one.
Well, the song that caught my attention is Queer Boy.
Yeah. A few minutes ago when I was talking about just occurring to me in thought but not in practice that perhaps my path would be to be an openly gay artist, Queer Boy was my way to play with it. You know, so I thought it would be kind of fun to write a song from a straight guy's perspective who basically was frustrated at not getting any by the women, you know, and gay guys are always best friends with the girls, and he comes to this gay guy and says, look, you know, you got to help me get an in here. I wanted to play with it a little bit and raise an eyebrow, but do it in a comical way.
How did your audience respond to that song?
Anytime I ever played that song, people would just laugh, and I think a lot of it was because, you know, there were people who knew about me in my personal life, and they thought it was hysterical that I was taking the reversal take.
They were saying, who are you kidding?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And from Levi's first album, Rough Around the Edges, here's a little bit of the song, Queer Boy.
That's why I'm asking you, queer boy, why do you get all the ladies? Coming clear to me that maybe I should try to be a queer boy.
The next song I want to hear about is from the new album and is called Hardly a Hero.
Hardly a Hero is actually kind of funny to talk about because me and this girlfriend of mine, Darcy, sat down and watched Spider-Man 2 and decided that we would try to write this sappy song about his whole dilemma between being a hero and falling in love, but it turned out actually being a viable song, and we kept it.
Just an ordinary man thrown into the life I didn't plan. Suddenly my world has changed. I'm unprepared to make my way. My resolve is growing weak. So unsure of who I'm supposed to be. The one who takes the noble path. This is the only thing I know to do to make it through. But I need you to believe that beneath this bravado, I'd still give anything to have the chance to get you back. And I'm hardly a hero for that.
Tell me about your experience with Atlantic Records.
I went with Atlantic Records last year. I got signed last summer and was moved to New York City by Atlantic Records as my producer was there and my whole team was there. And I began working with a producer who had worked with Avril Lavigne and Vanessa Carlton. And we began putting the album together and nearly got it finished when Elektra Records, which is under Atlantic, folded. And they laid off over 200 executives and got rid of some new artists. And
still kept ownership of the album?
No. I mean, I don't own the album. I can eventually come back and re-record the songs that I recorded.
Oh, those were different songs.
Those were different songs.
Okay.
And I wasn't able to draw from any of those songs for this new album, which was also a help in my decision to choose material that was perhaps less polished and less less compatible with the top 40 market. You know, top 40 is all icing and no cake. You know, it's like there's not much substance there, in my opinion.
So during your time with Atlantic, that's when your decision evolved to be out of the closet in your career.
Yes, it was very difficult to be with Atlantic Records and be around a group of high-powered executives who believe you're the next big thing, and they're all pulling you into their personal world and expecting you to, you know, reciprocate that by building some sort of personal rapport with them. However, you know, being told by this person and that person that you are not to breathe a word of the fact that you are gay, you find that you're in a day-to-day cycle of editing your life. When you're talking to people, you're even outright lying about it, and it was just so not what, it didn't resonate with who I was. And after a year of that, I got so incredibly exhausted with trying to pretend to be something, and for what? I think it was absolutely a part of the divine plan for me to walk away from Atlantic Records and be able to start a career on a different basis, in a place of just honesty. Sure, if Elektra hadn't folded, and, you know, if this or if that would have happened, who knows? I could have, you know, been straight into MTV and had to deal with that lie for much longer than I ever would have wanted to, and God forbid that would have happened. I think it was absolutely part of the plan that everything happened the way it did.
So the songs that Atlantic has in a can somewhere are not as honest?
They're honest. They're not just genuine, if that's a word. They're genuine expressions of my art. But when you have a producer that begins to make word choices and other things that water down what you're trying to say, it just becomes that much harder to determine what perhaps I wanted to convey from the heart. You know, so it was kind of masked, you know. I started from a very genuine place, but the end product went through several other hands before it ended up being the finished product.
They made it plastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you get any discouragement about putting lyrically gay songs on your album?
Surprisingly, I got discouragement from having openly gay lyrics, even from gay friends of mine. I have had a great percentage of gay friends of mine even who have been like, we're going to limit your audience. We're going to really gamble with your career, and your level of success is not going to be as great as it could be. And, you know, I'm just in a place now in life, though, I just don't buy it. You know, I think that times are changing, sure, and the younger generations don't care as much. But the fact of the matter is, I'm always going to write lyrics from a universal perspective. And I want to continue to be able to speak to anyone. And I want, and the purpose of that is, if you can make a relationship with your listener, speak of something that they've experienced, and they can listen to a song and draw a memory that they've experienced and almost relive it with you, then you have created an emotional connection to that person, and being gay becomes an afterthought because you've spoken to them where they live. And I never want to limit my audience by the lyrical choices I make, but I'm not going to limit myself anymore and pretend I have to be anyone that I'm not.
How biographical are your songs?
Very biographical. I think most of my songs, I think very seldom do I ever write from observation, from watching others, from, it's usually a direct experience of mine that creates the lyric that I'm writing. And that's always been the case ever since I started writing, since 12 years old. It was an outlet for me to express things that I was going through as a young child. Checking myself into Exodus International when I am in junior high school and going through that inner turmoil for 6 years through junior high and high school, my first year of college, it just turned out that songwriting was the outlet I had, the place of peace that I found, you know? And so I don't know that I'm able to divorce that now. I think it's always going to be very biographical.
I've read that on the 10 songs on the new album, each is about a different guy.
I've been busy, huh? Yes, this is true. Not that I was actually involved with all of them to a great degree, but, you know, there's one who's, it's about a straight friend of mine who I fall in love with. I Should Go. Another one is about a couple that I, that are two wonderful friends of mine, and I've watched their relationship, and they've been together, Steve and Gary, for 13 years, and they have provided me with an example of a love that is, it's divine. It's, you know, guys I've dated in New York City, they ended up on there. You know, there's a little joke with all my friends that, you know, stay away from Levi. Don't date him, because the minute you do, he's going to write a song that airs all your dirty laundry.
Or if you've already written the song, next.
Exactly. Yeah, I only date for songs. Jump in, get emotionally involved until I have a good song from it, then I move on.
What a plot.
But it's not true, JD. I don't do that, I swear.
I have analyzed your album. I went through and analyzed the songs, and here's what they are about in order. Falling in love, being in love, lost love, lost love, lost love, wanting to be in love, falling out of love, falling in love, looking back on love.
Wow. I don't think I've broke it down that clearly before.
What does that say about you?
I don't know what it says about me as a whole. I know where I am now. You know, I know that through falling in love and falling out of love or lost love and all the experiences that kind of make up this project as a whole, it's left me in a place where now more than ever I'm so clear about what I want. And the clearer I get about what I want, the harder it is to find. I think that's true for every one of us. And, you know, relationship, experience by experience, we kind of begin to hone in on the kind of experience we want for ourselves. And it is always trial and error. You know, you can't figure that out until you get your feet wet. And I've definitely got mine wet.
you got wet feet.
Exactly.
Of what song that you've written are you the most proud?
The song I'm most proud about from a songwriting craft perspective would probably be I Should Go. I think that's probably the strongest song from a songwriting standpoint. There was this friend of mine who is also a singer-songwriter from the UK, and we would get together in New York City and do some writing together as he was writing for his album and I was writing for mine. We began to really connect on a lot of levels, from our upbringing, you know, families struggling and coming from struggling lower class to making their way. And so many of our experiences growing up were so similar. We just really connected. And you know, he's straight. He has a girlfriend back in the UK. But the connection we had, the camaraderie between us was so strong. And somehow on my end, it began to eroticize itself. And the closeness that we would feel kind of drew me into a pretty hardcore crush. And I began to kind of allow myself to stay in that headspace for a little too long until I realized, well, look, if I'm going to honor the brotherhood that we have created, I'm going to have to let that go because it just won't happen. So I Should Go was what came from me as I let that go.
Here we go, isn't it familiar? I hadn't had someone to talk to in such a long time, and it's strange all we have in common, and your company was just the thing I needed tonight. But somehow I feel I should apologize, 'cause I'm just a little shaken by what's going on inside. I should go before my will gets any weaker and my eyes begin to linger longer than they should. I should go before I lose my sense of a reason and this hour holds more meaning than it ever could. I should go, I should go, baby, I should go.
I've got to hear about the song, Man Out of Me.
Yeah. After my first year of college, I dropped out of Exodus International for the healing of the homosexual. I had been kicked out of college because a dorm roommate of mine had found out that I had been studying the issue of homosexuality from a personal aspect of wondering whether God really even cared or not, and he thought that was appalling, and went to the board of directors and told them, and I was very active in the Christian organizations in college, and also had a Christian album that was about to come out at the time, and they dropped me. They kicked me out of school, and then an intern at my Christian record label also went to the same college and heard this and told the label, and the label dropped me. And so all of a sudden, I just leave the Christian world with everything stripped from me at 19, and I fall in love for the first time. And it turns out that the first guy that I fell in love with, I now move in with, and we start building a life together, turns out to be an abusive alcoholic. And, you know, coming from a graduating class of 5 people in a small town of Oliver Springs and being completely sheltered in the Christian world and Christian music and living my life in the church, I didn't have the facilities to know what to do with that kind of situation, with domestic violence. I never even given thought to domestic violence, let alone ever thought I would be a part of it in a gay relationship. That's actually how my mom found out that I was gay, because she began to put two and two together and confronted me with it and actually helped me leave and helped me get out of the relationship. But it was a very empowering experience, on the other hand, because if anything forced me to learn how to respect and love myself, it was coming out of something like that. And writing Men Out of Me, I wanted to not spend too much time in the darkness of that experience, but I wanted to focus on the empowering aspect of that. Because I think that those things can be brought to a place of positivity if you use them that way. And for me, it was such an empowering experience at the end of the day.
That song seems to be the, I guess, the rawest on the album, as far as exposing the most.
Yes. And it was a very difficult decision to include that on the album. And even now, JD, I've only ever performed that song one time, and it happened to be the performance that was recorded. It's on the album. I haven't performed it again still. Not yet, anyway. But I have a premiere performance in Los Angeles for my new album on January 16th. And that will be the second time I've ever sang that song for the public.
Well, I'm glad you included it.
Yeah, me too, because I'm actually getting a lot of positive feedback from people who have been in that circumstance and have found it as a comfort and an empowering experience listening to it. So I'm so glad that I ended up putting it on there.
I can't, at this second, think of another song about a gay relationship about abuse.
I don't think it's a subject that's often mentioned.
For a male-to-male, this is good.
I'm glad that you think so, because I've been a little taken back that there isn't a lot of voices that I've heard anyway, and perhaps there are out there and I just haven't come across them, but I haven't heard a lot of speaking out about this, you know?
Well, I could see this very well, very easily reaching someone in that situation and being a help.
I hope so. I hope so, because, you know, it's out there and it happens. I hope that the song really does kind of reach out to somebody, because it's something I don't think is being spoken to much about.
Something that I never said, a story that I've never shared. I was only 20 years old, he was a love affair. Soon became a humble home, wrecked with animosity.
Sing it.
Took it to the bottle, and then turned around and took it out on me. And I was just a boy, a scrawny little boy, a naive, faggot little boy, too confused by love to leave. Abused by you to see that you were maniacal, certifiable. It's comical when I'm looking back. I see you made a man out of me. Yeah. And life has been so good to me, taught me things about the soul. Pain is just an error in thought that I'm in full control. Glad I started long ago, learning in the hardest way. So now I know my power, and that bullshit would never fly today. And I was just a boy, sheltered little boy. I let you on that little boy. Might have been too young to see, but look what you made of me. 'Cause you were reliable, certifiable. It's comical when I'm looking back. I see out of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, out of me.
misguided little boy. I let you use that little boy. Might have been too young to see, but just look what you, look what you, look what you made of me. For being the liar, certifiable. It's comical. When I'm looking back, I see you've made a man out of me. You made a man out of me. Oh, no.
You've also done some acting. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yeah, you know, it was shortly after I moved here. I was sitting in my new apartment in Los Angeles and saw this Backstage West. A roommate of mine had it. I didn't even know what the magazine was about. I looked it up and I thought, oh, these are auditions. These are auditions for musicals and film and TV and whatever. And I was like, I saw this little write-up of this little musical I had never heard of at the time called Rent. And I was like, well, I don't have a job yet. It seems like a fun way to spend the day. So I got the information. I headed out. I did this cattle call. Didn't have a resume. Like, grabbed a picture, you know, not even a headshot. And went on the audition. And had no idea this would happen, but I ended up getting a call after several callbacks later. I was called for the role of Roger in Rent. And that was my first introduction to acting. And after doing Rent, I never really anticipated going and doing any more acting. I thought it was kind of just a little fun experience I got to dip into and on with the music, you know. But I ran into a manager friend of mine who had gotten wind of an independent film that was going on in Los Angeles. And she was like, look, you did Rent. You know, you did a great job with that. You got some good reviews and stuff. So, like, why don't you go out for this film? And I'm like, gotta be crazy. I have film acting. I don't know anything about this. Well, I ended up getting up one of the leads, and it won 3 film festivals. And all of a sudden, I've got an agent, and they're marching me in to audition for the role of Matthew McConaughey's brother in the movie Frailty. And that was my next film. And that was a great experience working with Bill Paxton and McConaughey. Since then, my music has been clearly taking over, and I've gone through the, you know, the A&M, did my deal, and the Atlantic deal, and now that I'm back in L.A., I'm so excited to get back with my agent and get back out and start auditioning again, because I fell in love with it. I was totally bit by the bug, and I want to continue to pursue it.
Pursue acting?
Yes.
Well, there's probably a lot of actors in L.A. already very upset with you.
Yeah, I had close friends of mine that hated me for mine over that.
Is there an overall message you hope your music gets across?
That's a good question. I've tried to incorporate positive choices through these songs, you know. Overall, I think that I was driven more by exhibiting the human experience rather than making an overall statement. And perhaps that is the statement. Perhaps that is a statement that wherever we are, we all have the same experiences. We all feel the same way. We all love the same way. We all hurt the same way. So perhaps by this, that is the statement that, you know, regardless of who we are, you know, gay, straight, black, white, whatever, that we all have the same human experience at the end of the day.
Some artists think this far ahead. Do you know what direction your next album might take?
I do know the kind of direction my next album is going to take, because when I finish an album, JD, I go straight into writing for the other album as quick as I can. Because,
get more guys, line up.
Yeah, exactly. But no, this one is actually going to be a lot sexier. I've got songs that I'm really wanted to approach anywhere from the darker side of sex to political issues to speaking out about organized religion. It's going to be a lot edgier. It's going to be pretty sexy too. But it's definitely more of a, you know, it's going to be full band. I'm going to come back to things like Queer Boy and No Apologies, where it's got kind of the funkiness, the funk feel of it, and pull that into a full band into it, and really kind of, you know, hopefully create a real in-your-face product with this next CD. I am real excited about it.
Gee, I can't wait for that. I'm down to the last song, But before I get to it, I want to thank you all for listening, and I want to especially thank Levi Kreiss for the wonderful interview. And, as I had expected, the interview was so good that I could not fit all of it into the radio version of this show, so my internet listeners could hear an extended version with a lot more comments and additional music. That, of course, can be found at www.queermusicheritage.com. And as always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write me at qmheritage@aol.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT Houston. I'm going to end this segment with one of my favorite songs from Levi's new album. And again, you can find out more about Levi Kreiss and his album One of the Ones at www.levikreiss.com. And Kreiss is spelled K-R-E-I-S. My favorite song from the album is probably Love in Another Light. And here's some final comments by Levi talking about that song.
The one that I am most connected to myself would be Love in Another Light, because if there is a song that kind of says where I am right now, of being, of putting, of everywhere I've been in the past, it is what it is. Now I know that I want something that is substantial, that is real, that is lasting. And that song's really close to my heart right now.
Turn down the dial. I don't want another listening to something I've had enough of. It's all the same, a big misconception, thinking I'd find what I was looking for. Love is not just a fix anymore. Man needs to feel something more. So maybe it's time that I tear down the walls, open my eyes. I wanna know love and another life. There's gotta be more to this life. Let me know. Fed from the ruin of manic pursuits that left nothing to gain. In desolate bars, drowning in whiskey, in black rooms with boys that don't have a name. At some point we all want the same, to live and let go of the pain. So maybe it's time that I tear down the walls, open my eyes. I wanna know love and another life. There's gotta be more to this life. Let me know love and another life. Love that's as deep as the ocean. I just wanna feel some emotion. So maybe time that I tear down the walls, open my eyes. I wanna know love and another light. There's gotta be more to this life. Let me know love and another light. Oh, I wanna know love and another light. There's gotta be more to this life. Let me know love in another life. Turn down the dial. I don't want.